A warm and friendly hello, welcome to lovely Las Vegas for Ghost Ghost Soups with myself, Craig E. Tears, and now part of the VSiN Family Podcast, and we've got a terrific podcast for you. It's in the second segment. We are going to be joined by Isabel Gonzalez. She does a great job over there with the Lair New Mexico, Mountain West Wire, as well as Mid-Major Madness. She does some great work when it comes to taking a look at mid-majors. You've got a Mountain West game that's going to be going down between Fresno State and UNLV, so going to be chatting about that. Just taking a look at the conference in general, because out of all the conferences that have been hit by COVID-19, that one has been one of the most heavily hit, so I do think that that's going to be interesting because you've got a lot of teams out there like Colorado State, Utah State that I think are going to be very interesting to bet on the rest of the season. So we're going to be chatting about that in the second segment. And then in the final segment, going to give you guys picks and analysis on every game on the Las Vegas betting board for this College Basketball Friday as we hit some bank shots. First things first, always love to be able to answer your Twitter questions on this podcast. And you've got one or two ways to be able to throw these in. First one is my Twitter timeline at JarenSquirty1. Keep in mind, letters M, name does not matter. So as per usual, please send these into the timeline. And the other way is via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you're able to fire whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Did not wind up getting in any Twitter questions today, but boy, did we see some good college basketball on Thursday. So let's take a look back at it. Try to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
A game from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
Seton Hall goes on the road and gets waxed by DePaul. 96-92, the final, as Seton Hall's 57-point second half. Not enough in a game that featured a whole bunch of offense for DePaul. They only go 6-23 from three-point range, but they win 36-45 at the free throw line, as this was just a calamity of officiating here. Ike Obiagu for Seton Hall had 5 blocks in the game, and it was not enough. Jared Roden comes up with 25 points, but for DePaul, he did wind up having Jalen Terry be able to step up for this team. He was able to chip in there 28 points. Really big game for him and for DePaul. Team that had been struggling recently, but has still been relatively solid against the spread. They were able to get the job done in this spot. Speaking of being able to get the job done, Stanford on the road. They did so against Washington State in a game that was just absolutely ridiculous. Game was supposed to tip off at 2 o'clock p.m. Pacific. Stanford was not, I guess you could call it, satisfied with the COVID-19 results of Washington State. They had to get retested. They did get retested. Game winds going off about 80 minutes later. And for Washington State, they were up in this game by a count of 42-31. And then they scored 1 point in the span of 14 minutes and about 20 seconds. Boy, oh boy. Well, it was good news for the under, and they still only lost by 5 points, but you take a look at Washington State, and that's one of the biggest famines that we have seen in a long, long time in college basketball. For Washington State, they go 4 of 10 at the free throw line. Samford went just 10 of 17, but for Samford, they win this game despite committing 19 turnovers. They wind up playing even up in the rebound battle, but the guy that came up big for them, Brandon Angel, 16 points. And this is a Samford team that is picking up steam, but that was very, very strange, to say the least. You wound up seeing some upsets out there in the Patriot League. Army as a money line underdog against Boston U. They get it done by a count of 73-63. Been very tepid on this Army team because they don't necessarily hit their free throws, but they were able to get it done there. And then Colgate. They wound up being an underdog against Navy, and they get a big win by a count of 69-50, as this is one of which Navy winds up scoring 1 point in the final, 6:19 of this one. We have just seen more and more ridiculous runs in college basketball this year than I feel like we have ever seen before. And when it comes to ridiculous runs, you wind up seeing a ridiculously good run in this game to be able to get you the over. The Citadel and UNC Greensboro Citadel gets it done by a count of 74-69, as this is a game that it wound up featuring a whole bunch of points late, 53 points in the final 8:30. So being someone else on the over, I was very happy about that one. You wound up seeing a massive upset out there in the Pac-12. Number 3, UCLA goes down to Oregon by a count of 84-81. If you saw the last play of the first half and you wound up laying 5.5 with UCLA, thoughts and prayers to you there, as it was a half-court heave with 7 seconds left. Hit absolutely nothing, but went right to an Oregon player for a bucket, so you wound up losing that one. And then for Oregon, what was very big for them in this game is that they did a good job of not turning the ball over, winning that battle by a count of 13-12. And 18-26 at the free throw line is going to fly because UCLA, they went just 7 of 25 from three-point range. Johnny Juzang, 23 points, 9 rebounds. You figured that Tiger Campbell was going to cool down a little bit with his shooting, went 3 of 10 from the floor. But for Oregon, 23 big points out of Jacob Young in this game. They really went with a six-man rotation, but it's just enough to be able to get the job done, even with Eric Williams Jr. going just 3 of 16 from the floor because he was able to give the team 8 rebounds as well. So a massive win for the Oregon Ducks. This was absolutely massive as well. Portland and San Diego winds up going to overtime. Fortunately, I wound up not going with the money line of Portland as they wound up blowing a 23-8 lead very early. They wound up clawing their way back from being down like 6 points in the final 6 or so minutes, but they managed to blow this game in overtime as you wound up having a grand total of like 2 points wind up getting scored in the final couple minutes of regulation. So despite this game going to overtime, the under wound up holding, so you wound up having that. Iowa, they take down Indiana by a count of 83-74 after they wound up getting down quite big. Indiana was up by 11 points with about 2 minutes left in the first half, and then Indiana just flat out melted down the stretch as you wound up having Chris Murray, not Keegan Murray, actually go off for this Iowa team. He comes off the bench for 29 points, 11 rebounds. Iowa just 6 of 18 from 3-point range, but they did a good job of turning Indiana over 23 times. Trace Jackson Davis, 5 blocks, 18 rebounds, 11 points. He committed just 2 of those turnovers, but the backcourt just completely let him down and let down my New York Post play of the day, so not necessarily thrilled about that. If you're Abilene Christian, you can't be thrilled about giving up 95 points to Grand Canyon as he wound up taking the L in this one. As for Grand Canyon, this is legitimately a very good team, and they wound up going 12 of 24 from three-point range, so certainly wound up keeping your eyes on the WAC because you still have Chicago State out there, and they wound up losing 85-63, so a good cover there. Iwupiwi, IUPUI, they wind up having another non-cover against UW Green Bay, 69-54. For UW Green Bay, they went 10 of 25 from three-point range. Jonathan Ivory came off of injury at 19 points, and for Iwupiwi, they wound up having BJ Maxwell coming off the bench, and he's really the only guy that can score for this team at this point. It's been a sad state of affairs for them. It has been a very sad state of affairs when it comes to what we've seen out of Southern Miss, and they once again get clobbered 83-57. Then, if you wound up taking the under in this game, you also got clobbered, as I'm doing this with about 3 minutes left in the game. Gonzaga scored 106 points, and there's 3 minutes and 58 seconds left in the second half. I have to have this up by midnight Pacific, but for Gonzaga, I mean, my goodness gracious, going into the final media timeout, right now you've got a team that's shooting 72.5% from the floor. And for BYU, they're shooting 12 of 28 from three-point range. They have 72 points on the board, and they're down by 34. I mean, that's just very, very strange right there. Arizona, they are able to get the win and an under against Colorado. And for Arizona, we talk all about this offense. Defense has been relatively solid there. USC, they wind up getting a win, but they wind up getting a very big test from Oregon State. And actually, they were trailing Oregon State throughout the entirety of the first half. Got down at one point by kind of 28-19, so not necessarily the world's greatest look for the Trojans. San Francisco, they completely dump truck Loyola Marymount. They wound up having 91 points going into the final media timeout themselves. They wound up having 22 points out of Jamari Boye. So San Francisco, the Dons are able to get the job done. Now, I'm doing this a little bit ahead of UC Irvine versus Hawaii just because that's a little bit of a later game. But what we're noticing right now in college basketball is that overs just continue to hit like wildfire. And we've seen now a little bit of reverse on home underdogs like I was talking about. Home underdogs now 120, 114, and 3 against the spread in the last 30 days. So hitting at a 51.3% clip, I think it's going to go up a tad bit more, but we've seen a little bit more normalcy there. But overs hitting at a 53.8% clip. 441 overs, 379 unders. We've also seen the home and road team splits be relatively 50-50 over the last 30 days because we have seen home teams recently have a little bit of a nice run. In the last 7 days, 149, 140, and 2 with home underdogs going 47, 40, and 1. But take a look at the last 7 days. Overs are 150 and 138 as I'm recording this. You've obviously got a couple games that might be not included in that, like the Hawaii versus UC Irvine game, but certainly we have been seeing quite a few overs in college basketball, so I'm going to be keeping my eyes on that. Going to be keeping my eyes out there in the Mountain West as well, as we've seen a lot of craziness in that conference. We've got a couple teams that have been going through COVID-19 concerns, and we're going to have UNLV versus Fresno State coming up tonight. So we're going to be talking about all that and so much more with Isabel Gonzalez of Mid-Major Madness, along with the Lair, New Mexico, and the Mountain West Wire. We're going to be chatting with her next right here on Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops-Hearson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation. I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Ghost Cousins. This is myself, Craig Hughes, and now a part of the VEASAN Family Podcast. And it is great to be joined by our guests, as this person does an absolutely terrific job being able to report on quite a few different platforms. She does great work over there with the Mountain West Wire. She does a lot more work when it comes to New Mexico, specifically for the Lair New Mexico. You're able to catch her on Mid-Major Madness as well. As we've got Isabel Gonzalez joining me on the podcast. You are able to follow her on Twitter at SZA, B-I-G, I will spell that out for you, C-I-S-A-B-E-L-G, and Isabel, great to have you aboard. Thank you.
Hey, Greg, thanks for having me. Always so much fun.
Always great to have you aboard, and it has been really fascinating to watch Mountain West this year, and just taking a look at things, because a lot of teams out there in this conference wound up having really good starts to the season. How much do you think that just everything that's been happening with COVID has affected a lot of these teams? Because we've been noticing a lot of pauses. San Diego State has had a couple games that they were supposed to play. Those have been pretty much taken off, and those are going to be hopefully rescheduled. But I feel like this conference, among all the ones in college basketball, has been perhaps affected the most.
Yeah, for sure. It obviously affects it because changing the schedules, you use a couple of days to scout your opponent, right? So whenever that changes, whenever you get a new one or you have to practice or just cancel that game or postpone it to way later, it affects you in how you prepare in those practices, and it affects you just mentally as well. But I think at this point, honestly, we've kind of been in this pandemic for a while, so teams kind of already know they have to be resilient. And they have to just kind of go with it. And I think this far in the season, you kind of know how your team responds and you know how you kind of gel together. The teams that are successful are going to be the ones who can bounce back and who can just adjust really quickly. And I think you can see that with teams like San Diego State. Obviously, right now they're in a pause, but right before that, when they beat Colorado State, that one was obviously a terrific win against a ranked opponent. So I think there really is not too much of an excuse when it comes to scheduling. Like, it definitely affects it, but everyone's dealing with it.
And it's been really interesting to take a look at a lot of these teams as well, with how they've been able to bounce back from these spots, a good bounce back slash a lack thereof, because I take a look at Colorado State ever since they wound up coming off their pause. They just have not necessarily been the same team. They wound up playing an Air Force bunch that was down A.J. Walker, and they got the win, but boy, oh boy, they didn't look great there. You mentioned it in that game against San Diego State. It was actually relatively tight in the first half. Colorado State was down by 4. They had really cut that lead to 3 early part of the second half, and then they literally did not score a bucket in the final 5:24 of that game. And I take a look at Colorado State. We're doing this just before they wound up wrapping up their game against Utah State, and I do have a couple concerns with this team. I think that they'll be able to bounce back, but I sort of think that their pause might have taken a little bit of the wind out of the sails of a team that has been very offense-oriented and very efficiency-oriented as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think pauses and missing players, of course, that's always going to be what kind of gets you the most. But also, you have to look at who they played. Having a pause and then playing a team like San Diego State, that's a very tough defensive team. So, like you mentioned, that second half was completely awful. They shot at less than 28% from the field. And you can't win if you shoot like that, of course. That's always going to get you with a strong team, and that's unfortunate for them. But again, like, you know, they were ranked, so they really almost don't have an excuse. But at the same time, it's understandable coming from a pause. But they can really use this game to kind of bounce back. So they're not undefeated anymore. But in losses like that, I think that's when you can really learn how you react and how you bounce back for, you know, future games.
Yeah, but when it comes to it, there are zero undefeated teams in all of college basketball. So there is certainly no shame in that, as we do have Isabel Gonzalez joining me on the podcast. And then the two Mountain West teams that we're going to be seeing on Friday, Fresno State and UNLV, I think that these are two intriguing teams because you've got Fresno State who's playing at a snail's pace. They are one of the slowest teams in all of college basketball. You've got a UNLV team that I feel like they've been turning the corner a little bit. That win that they wound up picking up against New Mexico, they looked very dominant in that. Royce Hamm is someone that I like, a guy that's able to give this team 10.5 rebounds per game, but certainly Orlando Robinson, a 7-footer that's able to shoot threes, is going to present a very difficult matchup. How do you see this one playing out? Because I think that this is going to be one of your classic first two, I don't even know if either team gets a 65 points win sort of games. And I do think that this is going to be an old school sort of defensive battle.
Yeah, I agree with that. And also agree that UNLV is an interesting team because at the beginning of the season, I don't know what I really expected from them. I thought they were kind of struggling. But against New Mexico, I also did not expect New Mexico to lose by that much and to look that bad against UNLV. So part of it was, of course, New Mexico, their own struggles, because right now they are kind of thin overall. They've lost a lot of key players. New Mexico is not a very experienced team, and you don't have bigs that have experience to really help out the team. Like, they're really lacking in that area. That obviously, whenever you face an opponent that has experience, and whenever the Lobos have a night off, like, it really makes it hard for them. And shooting wise, they're also struggling there. New Mexico before used to have, you know, at least two guys that were scoring pretty well, but now Jalen House and Jamal Mashburn Jr., they can still score in double digits, but if you look at their shooting percentages, they aren't that great all the time anymore. So New Mexico has a lot of work to do. Not trying to take anything away from UNLV. I thought they looked pretty good, but, you know, that game's a little bit iffy to look at because you have to also think of, like, what New Mexico is going through at the same time. So that makes the upcoming game for UNLV even more exciting because you can really see where they're at.
And when it comes to the Fresno State side of things as well, this has been a team that has dealt with a lot with regards to backcourt because reports came out on Wednesday that it sounds like Jamero Baker is unlikely to return this year. He was out of the lineup, then they wound up being able to get him back for two games, and then he was out, and then he returned for like two or three games, and now he's just out for the season. And this is a Fresno State team that they don't really shoot it well from three-point range at 31%, but I do feel like what they're able to do down low with Orlando Robinson and company has been able to make up for a lot of this. And Fresno State, I think, is a team that they can either beat or lose to just about any team in the conference just because of the way that they play with having so much defense on their roster, but at the same time, not really having a lot other than Orlando Robinson in the scoring department as well.
For sure. And that's kind of the Mountain West overall, honestly. I feel like every year, any team can lose to any team. It is going to be a fun one. And Orlando Robinson has been doing really well. So I think it will kind of come down to how his momentum keeps going. I believe he is fourth in the KenPom Player of the Year stats right now. So obviously he's doing well. He's turning a lot more heads right now. So whenever you are struggling, I think teams always kind of look at their leader. And right now that's him. So if he can kind of keep it going, if he can keep calm and collected, then the rest of the team should follow.
Yep, I do agree with you. I think that Orlando Robinson, certainly the key for this Fresno State team, as we do have Isabel Gonzalez, does a terrific job over there at the Laird, New Mexico, Mountain West Wire, and so much more, joining me on the podcast. And he did mention New Mexico a little bit earlier, a team that has really cranked up their tempo this year. Last year, it was just not a traditional New Mexico team. They were playing very slow. They were dealing with a bunch of injuries. But I know that one of their big players, the gentleman that came in from Kansas, Jethro Muscaden, a guy that was seeing a lot of starts in the low post, he wound up suffering a very serious car accident. Obviously, you're much more concerned about him as a human being just getting back to normal life rather than him actually getting back out there on the floor. But how has that affected this team? Because I saw them against UNLV in that contest, and you can tell that they just looked a little bit different on offense without him.
Yeah, for sure. So obviously, if you don't have, like, even before that happened, the Lobos were kind of thin in that area with bigs. You have Sebastian Forslang being the only guy that's actually listed as a center for the Lobos. But he's a freshman. He also comes from Europe, which is a different style of play. So right away, you're kind of thin in that position. You're going to struggle. But then when you lose a couple other guys, like, you know, Jethro, it affects you a lot because you have to change a little bit of your style. So it can affect both offense and defense. And a lot of players are kind of playing out of position. Barima Sek, he's a freshman, and he actually was going to be class of 2022, but he reclassified to go with the Lobos. He was going to redshirt this year. A couple weeks ago, he had some health concerns. I'm not sure where they were, but he told coach he wanted to redshirt. But now that they need more players, he's going to play. We're going to see kind of how he does. Of course, he is still lacking a little bit of experience, like a lot of other players. But Patino's kind of like reshaping his team right now. He said that Barima is more of a four, and then you're going to have Javante Johnson also play the forward. Then you have Sebastian Forslink, who, again, freshman from Europe, still learning. He's going to be in the five with Jay Allen Tavar and Jordan Arroyo, who's a walk-on. So you can kind of see kind of what he's trying to do there with using the height that he has, but it's going to be difficult.
Oh, it certainly is going to be. You'd never want to have to just be dealing with anything like that, Jethro. From everything I've seen, he's still dealing with a coma right now. So, I mean, my goodness, that takes a lot out of you just when it comes to not just on the court, but just a little bit emotionally as well. And it certainly is going to be fascinating to take a look at this team moving forward as well. And when it comes to the Mountain West, I do think that it is going to be really interesting to see what we wind up getting out of some of these, I guess you could call them upper tier teams, the teams that I think are maybe a little bit behind the likes of Colorado State, San Diego State. I'm talking about Wyoming, Utah State, and Boise State. I think that these three schools are going to be really interesting watches moving forward. Wyoming and Utah State, as a matter of fact, they're going to be doing battle on Saturday. And when it comes to these three schools, I think that they could be teams that really make or break what winds up happening in the Mountain West, whether or not the conference winds up getting multiple bids to the NCAA tournament. And when it comes to these three schools, I think that all three have a very good opportunity to be able to rise up, be able to finish in that top two of the conference, and perhaps win the conference tournament.
For sure. In the Mountain West Conference, you have some top teams, but kind of like how you just mentioned, they all compete against each other. So you don't have teams kind of like in the West Coast Conference when you can clearly have your top four and that's it. You know, those are going to be fighting against each other, but you kind of had the order already set. But when it comes to the Mountain West, I mean, like we just saw with San Diego State and Colorado State, you know, they can beat each other still. A lot of times people joke that the Mountain West just likes to, you know, hurt itself by competing against so much against their like top opponents. So yeah, this is a conference that has a lot of really talented players. I mean, Utah State has Justin Bean, who's a complete veteran, very, very good player. You know, he's competing against other great players in the conference, like Matt Bradley from San Diego State. So you got a lot of fun games there for sure.
I do agree with you, as we do have Isabel Gonzalez joining me on the podcast. And Isabel, when it comes to just what we're going to be seeing on Friday and into the weekend as well, is there maybe another game or two that's really standing out to you? It doesn't have to necessarily be in the Mountain West, but I do think that we've got a lot of very good action between a lot of really good schools that is going to be going down over the next few days. Is there anything that you're really going to be keeping your eye on when it comes to the weekend?
Saturday, I think I'm really looking forward to. Honestly, I'm going to not lie to you. I love watching ranked opponents play against each other. You know, when you can play other teams, and of course, they can be really, really good. But when you see ranked opponents, I feel like that always ups the game. So those are the first ones I kind of mark in my calendar. So Iowa State, Texas should be a really fun one. Especially Texas, they just got upset. Was it last week when they were upset?
Yep, last week.
Yes, it's always interesting to see when a team that's, you know, pretty good gets upset and how they bounce back in the upcoming games. So that's going to be a fun one. I know they're 21-15, but I feel like those numbers, you know, you can kind of switch it whenever. Duke is a really good team, so I'll be watching that one for sure. And then, of course, Gonzaga, which is a team I always follow. Like I mentioned earlier, the West Coast has some pretty clear teams, but that does not make it any less interesting. because they do have four teams that are projected to make it into the NCAA tournament. Really, just watching all other teams compete, Santa Clara is actually pretty good. It's not one of those teams projected to be in it, but they've also shown some really good things with, you know, non-conference opponents this season. So that's a team that you can't really discard all the time for at least interesting games.
I agree with you when it comes to the West Coast Conference. This is the best that I've seen teams outside of Gonzaga look in a really, really long time. I would say my lifetime. I obviously wasn't alive when people like Hank Gathers and company were out there in the West Coast Conference, but I certainly do think that we are going to be seeing some very good action out there, out west. And Isabel, I know you do a great job. Covered a little bit of everything. As I mentioned a little bit earlier, you're over there with the Mountain West Wire, the Lair, New Mexico, Mid-Major Madness, list goes on and on. So let the good people at home know what's on tap for you the next few weeks and how they can follow along on social media and other platforms.
For sure. So if you follow me on Twitter, that's where I tweet out a lot of my stories. Like Greg mentioned, I do a lot of Mountain West. I do West Coast, sometimes some Big West. So a lot of West Coast teams. That's kind of my area. Yeah, upcoming for me, I'm working on a story on Sebastian Forsling, actually. Although he's still learning when New Mexico, it's going to be a fun story talking about his personality and just kind of what kind of kid he was growing up. I love those kinds of stories. So if you're ever interested in stories for players and getting to know the behind the scenes, follow me on Twitter.
And Isabel does an absolutely terrific job with all of her reporting. Take a look at just the landscape of college basketball, giving a little bit more insight on some of these guys' path to what we're seeing right now. And Isabel always does a great job when she joins this podcast and did so once again today. So big thanks to her for joining me right here on Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Friday as we hit some bank shots.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation. I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops-Spears, and always a pleasure to get Isabel Gonzalez on the podcast, doing a great job over there with the Lair, New Mexico, Mid-Major Madness, Mountain West Wire, list goes on and on. She is very well connected with college basketball and always does a great job on this podcast, so big thanks to her. Now it is that time, the podcast, to give you a side total on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Friday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board. Or bank shots.
Do note that as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter feed at JerrinScorty1. Gonna be going in Las Vegas rotation order. This is pretty much going to be time order today since we don't have any extra games, so nice, neat, and clean. And the reason why I go in Las Vegas rotation order is because instead of saying that, you want to bet on like the Iona spread, for instance. Instead of saying Iona, you'd actually give the rotation number of 884. So that's why I do that when you wind up coming out here to Las Vegas. And many books do wind up using this order as well. So we start with 877, 878 on the betting board. Buffalo is going to be hitting the road to face off against Ball State. Ball State, between a 6 and 6.5 point home underdog in your total on this game, it is between 161.5 and 162. I made this line 6.5, so I'm looking to lay a 6 here. When it comes to Buffalo at 6.5, I'd be a little bit more inclined to lay it now with Buffalo. They have been without Josh Umbala the last few games. A guy that's been able to give them 15 points, 8 boards, has been a solid 3-point shooter for this team. Wound up playing limited minutes against Western Michigan and had 13 points in 22 minutes. So, got to figure that he is probably going to be back to relatively 100%. Jonathan Williams, 18 points, 5.5 rebounds, shooting 37% from 3. Overall, Buffalo, they shoot 71% on the line, 34% from 3. Still one of the most up-tempo teams in all of college basketball. And dating back to the beginning of the 2020-21 season, Ball State, a top 5 team of the over in all of college basketball. You've got Luke Bumbalo, who's been able to shoot about 37.5% from 3, 12.5 points per game. But I think that this might be a little bit too tough for Ball State to be able to hit this over, because it's a Ball State team that they play at a little bit more of an up-tempo style, but it's not like they play at a breakneck speed. You do have Tyler Cochran along with Peyton Sparks. These two guys both give you 11.3 points per piece. They have been able to combine for about 11.5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals per game. So they've been able to do a nice job there. Marion Thomas shoots 37.5% from 3-point range, but this is a bunch that they've been dealing with. A little bit of ailment. Jalen Windham has been out of the fold, a guy that's been able to get the team right around 9 points per game, shooting about 40% from 3-point range. So that has affected Ball State a little bit without him in the fold. They've been throttling down a little bit. They've actually been playing a tad bit better on defense recently as well, to their credit. 72 points for fear, given up in 3 of the last 5 games. So did wind up making this total 156.5. I think that with Umbala back in the fold, having guys like Ronald Segu, who have been able to do a great job. Segu has been able to get this team 5 assists, right around 16 points per game, while shooting 45% from 3. That Ball State is going to be up against it. Set my line at 6.5, but once again, with Umbala back, I'd be willing to lay a 6.5 before I'd be willing to take it, especially at a 6 like Buffalo year. And with this total, made it a 156.5. You do have a Buffalo team that plays very fast, but defense has improved a little bit for this team this season as compared to last. And Ball State is a team that not necessarily the world's fastest, so they are relatively fast. I think we just went a little bit too far with this total, taking it under, and I'm going to be laying the points here with Buffalo. We move on to 879, 880 on the betting board. Purdue is going to be playing us at Nebraska. Nebraska is a 20-point underdog in your Tarleton's game. Today we're between 155.5 and 156. Made this total 154. You've got a Purdue team that they're very much a mid-tempo team. They are very efficient, but we have seen their efficiency go from more like a top 5 offense in all of college basketball to more like in the 30s/40s over the last 35 days. You do have a team that overall shoots 41% from 3 at Mackey Arena. This Purdue team is a wagon, which is why I did wind up saying them as a 22.5 point favorite. Now Nebraska, they're a top 5 team in all of college basketball with regards to tempo, and there's a chance that Trey McGowan plays in this game for the first time since mid-November, but even if he does go, you can't figure that you're going to be able to get too much out of him. While he was fully healthy last year, gave the team 10.5 points per game, but I mean, this is a guy that's been out for nearly 2 months, so that's a little bit of an issue for Nebraska. Turnovers are starting to rack up. Alonzo Verge was doing a very good job towards the beginning part of the season of not turning the ball over. Now 3+ turnovers in 7 out of the team's last 10 games. Overall, the season averaging 3.6. That's been able to get the team 14 points, 5 rebounds, and 5.8 assists per game. But problem for Nebraska, they do shoot 29% from 3-point range. Now, CJ Wilcher along with Kobe Webster, both of these guys have been able to combine for about 14.5 points per game. They're shooting about 36% from 3-point range. Kasey Chominga has been able to shoot about 35% from the outside, but 8 points for fear in each out of his last 4 games. He's been losing steam, and then for Purdue, they're going to be able to bludgeon Nebraska down low. Nebraska has one guy giving you more than 6 rebounds per game, and Derek Walker. Meanwhile, you've got Travion Williams and Zach Edey, just 2 giants of the earth who have been able to combine for about 17 rebounds per game. You've also had Edey give you a little bit over a block per contest as well. Sasha Stefanovic, one of the best sharpshooters in all of college basketball, making 42% of his threes, 11.5 points per game. And then under the radar, Mason Gillis is shooting 50% from 3-point range. He has shot at least 40% from the outside at each of the team's last 4 games. He has put up at least 9 points in every one of those games. He's been able to do a quality job for this Purdue team. I think that it's going to be tough for Nebraska in this spot, because this is a Purdue team that, while they get all the praise on offense, on defense, defense. They're still one of the better teams in all of college basketball. It's going to be a lot of one and dones for Nebraska. You don't see a lot of turnovers from Purdue, but I do think that this is going to be a tad bit of a slower tempo the bookmakers are expecting. I think that Purdue is going to be able to get their style, set the total at 154, diving under it. Willing to lay up to 22.5 here with Purdue. Willing to lay the points. 881, 882 on the betting board. St. Peter's is going to be playing with Monmouth. Monmouth is a 4.5 to a 5-point road favorite, and your total on this game, finding it at a 133.5 to a 134. And for Monmouth, this team has been a money maker for you all season long. They are 12-1 against the spread, and I made them 5 in this spot. I'm looking to lay a 4.5. At the 5, I'd be willing to lay it before I'd be willing to take it, because this is a St. Peter's team that they have not played since the 18th of December. Now, for Monmouth, they themselves have not played since the 22nd of December, but with Monmouth, I do like the offense of this team quite a bit more, as you've got a combined 32 points out of Shavar Reynolds and George Pappas. These two guys have been able to combine to be able to shoot about 39% from 3, and down low, the UNC transfer, Walker Miller, actually the brother of Wes Miller, 15 points, 7 boards, shooting 35% from 3. Overall, Monmouth shoots 80.5% the free throw line, 35.5% from 3-point range. That really comes into play with the spreads, and then you've got a St. Peter's team that they shoot at the free throw line more around 64.5%. That is a big reason why I'd be willing to lay a 5 much before I'd be willing to take a 5, though I did make that my number itself. For St. Peter's, it's a team that they do pride themselves a lot more on defense. Casey Ndefu, right around 5 rebounds, 8 points, giving the team 2.5 blocks per game, so to be able to hold up there. But you take a look at it, Daryl Banks the third, along Doug Eggert. These two guys have been able to combine for a little bit over 22.5 points per game. They're shooting about 35% from 3-point range, but overall, this team turns the ball over 16 times per game. Monmouth has been very solid on defense themselves. They only generate right around 6 steals per game, but they do a good job of being able to cut off the 3-point arc. They're a team that they've been able to do an okay job in the glass, as you've been able to get right around 11 points and 5 boards out of Marcus McCleary. I think that this is going to be a tough one here for St. Peter's. Do you mind if saying this total 133? I think that things are going to be throttled down, especially with Monmouth coming off of a pause along with St. Peter's. So looking at an under, but I think that Monmouth is going to be able to dominate in the backcourt, willing to lay the 5 here when it comes to Monmouth. 883, 884 on the betting board. Iona is going to be playing us in Manhattan. The Jaspers find themselves a 15 to 15.5 point underdog, and your total on this game is 147. Iona has been a terrific team, but they have been playing some close ones recently. I do think that Manhattan has the chops to be able to hang in there. For Manhattan, you've got Jose Perez, who's been able to give the team 14 points, 5.5 assists, doesn't really turn the ball over a whole heck of a lot, and has given the team 18-plus points in 4 out of the last 5 games, so he's been able to do a terrific job there. Now, turnovers are a little bit of a woe. He's had 3-plus of them in 4 of the team's last 5. You do take a look at Iona, and this is a team that they do a solid job on defense, actually playing in the top 70 with regards to possessions per game, but they do a solid job holding it down, as their team that they wind up generating right around 6.5 steals per game. Down low, they get 6 blocks per game, headlined by Nelly Jr. Joseph. A steal, 2 blocks per game, while being able to give the team 14 points, 8.5 boards. So I do like his game. Elijah Joyner, who comes in from Tulsa, has been able to deliver 10 points, 4.7 boards, 2.5 assists. Not necessarily a great 3-point shooter, but it's given this team a lot of flow. 2 turnovers or fewer in each of the last 6 games that he's played in. Dylan Van Eyck, 9.5 points, 5.5 boards, 3.5 assists. Shoots 40% from 3, so got a lot of very well-rounded players there. And then you've got Barrick Jean-Louis, who really wound up getting off to a rough start to begin the year. He was able to score 10 points, had 3 steals in that game against Fairfield, so looks like he's finding his touch once again. But then you take a look at this Manhattan team, and they've been doing better at the free throw line this year. Shooting 74%, they have been one of the worst teams at the free throw line the last few seasons. And Nelson sells turnover, was 3.5 turnovers per game, but has been able to deliver for the team right around 11.5 points per game while shooting 46% from 3-point range. Samir Stewart has been in and out of the fold a little bit, but a guy that is able to give you 8 points per game. This layoff should have him very healthy. This is a Manhattan team that last time they wound up playing was against the Citadel on the 21st of December. That did wind up causing me to handicap them down a point or two from normal, but even with that, I wound up setting this line more around a 14.5, because I do think that guys like Samba Diallo, Elijah Buchanan, who have been able to combine for about 15.5 points and 9.5 rebounds per game, going to be able to hold in there. Diallo and Buchanan combined for 3 steals per game. Manhattan as a collective, they do get 9 per contest, and I do think that that defense is going to allow Manhattan to keep within arm's reach. I do think that's going to be a little bit more of a defense-oriented game. So the total 144.5, so diving under and taking the points with Manhattan. 885, 886 on the betting board. Maris is going to be playing us to Siena. The Saints are a 6-point underdog, and your total in this game is 130. This is a spot fun, of which I want to make it my line 6 as well, my total 130. So looks like someone was copying me, but at the current numbers, I'd be willing to take an over before I'd be willing to take an under, because, well, when you wind up having a 6-point game with a minute left to go, you all know what happens. You wind up going to the free throw line, and at a 6, I'd be willing to take the points before I'd be willing to lay the points. Now, this is a Siena team that has been up and down all season long, but Kobe Rogers has been able to do a good job out there in the backcourt, 13.5 points per game, and has scored double figures in each of the team's last 4 contests. Turnovers can be a little bit of an issue for the team, but you know, he commits right around 2 per contest. And take a look at Marist. And this is a team that they've got one guy that's averaging more than 5 rebounds per game, and Matt Hermese. Now, you've been able to get Ricardo Wright along with J.O. Atuka going. These two guys combined for 27 points. They shoot 43% from 3, but I take a look at this Marist offense, and they don't do a good job of being able to dish it out at all. They get a combined 8.9 assists per game. They shoot about 34% from 3, 68% at the free throw line, but I feel like it's a very disjointed offense. I just think that it's unesthetically pleasing, and it's not necessarily going to be able to hold up. Now, Andrew Playtech is out for the season for Siena. That really hurts the team, but Aiden Carpenter wound up missing a few games. He is back in the fold. He has been able to give the team at least 10 points in each of the last 4 games that he's played in, so that is very big. Jackson Sormo, 7 boards, down low. And then Anthony Gaines, he transfer from Northwestern, 8.5 points, 5.5 rebounds. Not a great 3-point shooter, but a guy that does a good job of just being very well-rounded, has been able to average right around a steal per game in the last 5 as well. So a guy that really steps up. Like I said, I made my total 130, and I made this line 6, but with late game fouling, I lean over before I take an under, and I'd be willing to take 6 before I'd be willing to lay it, but what I'm going to be betting is really going to be based on some line movement in the AM. So just want to throw out there that disclaimer, but that's where I stand at current numbers. 887, 888 on the betting board. Rider is going to be playing host Quinnipiac. The Bobcats find themselves anywhere between a 2 and 2.5 point underdog in your tallest game, anywhere between 145 and 146.5. When it comes to Rider, I want to make them a 5.5 point favorite. When it comes to Quinnipiac, I do think that this is a team that has been a little bit charmed this season. When they wound up playing a few days ago, they wound up running into a Canisius team in which they just couldn't hit threes off of Canisius to save their lives. I do think that that is going to be able to turn itself around a little bit. Matt Polanich is now back in the fold, a guy that has been able to shoot about 42.5% from 3-point range, 15.5 points per game. Wound up missing a little bit of time just before the break. And Kevin Marfo is able to do a good job down low, 9.2 points, 10.5 rebounds, and has been able to give the team 4.5 assists per game as well. But Savion Lewis, one of the team's main facilitators, he is out of the fold, a guy that has been able to chip in there right around 4 assists per game, has not been seen in over a month. And then you take a look at the flip side for Ryder, and I do like their backcourt duo in Demencio Vaughn along Dwight Murray Jr. These two guys combined for 26 points, a little bit over 13 rebounds. Murray Jr. gives you 4 assists per game. They combine for 2.6 steals per game, and Vaughn shoots 39% from 3. Overall, Ryder shoots 75% free throw line. Big in a spread like this, you wind up getting a total of about 7.7 steals per game out of these guys. Ajeri Oguamo Johnson has been able to do a good job down low, right around 7 rebounds per game. Not necessarily a prolific scorer, but a guy that's able to give you right around 7.5 points per game. And then you take a look at Mervin James, who winds up coming in from North Alabama, and he has been able to do a solid job with right around 8.5 points, 4.5 rebounds. Hasn't necessarily been a game stopper by any stretch of the imagination, but now 9+ points in 4 of the team's last 5 games. Feels like the transfers for Ryder are really meshing and clicking together. And you take a look at this Quinnipiac team, and I just have my question marks when it comes to guys not named Blanc. It's necessarily shooting from the outside. They shoot about 33% from 3 now. They do make 76% of their free throws as well, but not very stout down low. Jacob Rigoni has seen a bit of regression with only 9 points per game, so I do think the Ryder should be able to get it done in the spot. Willing to lay up to 5.5 with them, and with Ryder, they have throttled down a little bit. This is a Quinnipiac bunch that I recognize they haven't played the world's greatest defense, but they themselves aren't playing as quickly as they have in past years, so did wind up setting the total at a 143.5, diving under, and willing to lay up to 5.5 here with Ryder, so laying the points. 889, 890 on the betting board. You've got VCU in the road face-off against St. Bonaventure. The Bonnies are a 2 to 2.5 point favorite in your total on this game, finding it anywhere between a 130.5 and a 131. I'm just out on the St. Bonaventure team. They wound up playing a game that wound up going to overtime against LaSalle a few days ago, and they got 3 minutes off the bench in that game. 3 total minutes and 2 fouls is what their bench delivered for them. This is literally a 5-man St. Bonaventure team. Kyle Lofton is now back. He's been able to give the team 16 points. He shoots it well from 3. Overall, your 5-man team shoots about 77% free throw line, 34% from distance. You've got Oshuni. He's been able to give the team 10.5 points, 7.5 rebounds, 3 blocks per game, but he's been dealing with some back issues. You've been able to have Jalen Attaway be able to give you 13.5 points per game. He's a guy that's been able to shoot about 40% from 3-point range. No clue why we haven't seen more out of guys like Quindary Adams and company, but, I mean, the five-man rotation is a five-man rotation, and then for VCU, this is a team that's able to go more like 8/9 deep, especially with Ace Baldwin back in the fold. Baldwin, Uwana missing the first eight or so games of the season, has been terrific. 10.8 points, 5.2 assists, 2.7 steals on 40% three-point shooting. It's really led to VCU playing quite a few overs ever since he wound up coming into the fold. He is someone that has been able to do a good job of being able to flow the offense on VCU. Still shooting about 65% of the free throw lines collective. They turn the ball over 15.5 times per game, but they generate 9.3 steals per game. Vince Williams has really impressed me. 11 points, 6 boards, 3.2 assists. Levi Stockard, it seems like they're going to get back as well. He's been able to get this team about 4 boards per game for the Kansas State transfer. Hassan Ward, 6 points, 5 rebounds. He chips in there nearly 2 blocks, a steal and a half per contest. He's been coming around with his offensive game a little bit as well. A combined 7 steals in the last 4 games. So I take a look at VCU. You've got a lot of depth when it comes to this team. Not necessarily a great offensive team. And St. Bonaventure, with playing this style, I think that they're really going to throttle down. What made them successful last year was playing very slow. I think that they're going to try to do that against VCU. I think that VCU just is going to be able to have their, for lack of a better term, depth win this game. I think that St. Bonaventure is going to be tired late, and that is going to allow VCU to win a grimy game that is going to involve a lot of defense and a lot of turnovers. Set this total at 125. I'm going to be diving under, and with VCU made them the 1-point favorite, so we'll take them on the money line. A91, A92 on the betting board. Akron is going to be hitting the road faceoff against Kent State. The Golden Flashes are between a 1 and 1.5 point favorites. You're going to pick them out there as well, and your total on this game setting between 133.5 and 135, and this is a total that I made a 130.5. You've got an Akron team and a Kent State team that are both in the bottom 75 with regards to possessions per game, and for Akron, it just has not been a rosy outlook for this team. I want to make them a 2.5-point underdog with Kent State. They themselves have been taking some bad losses. You take a look at this Kent State team, and they lose at home to Northern Illinois and to Central Michigan, but at the same time, they got a road win against Ball State. They were able to knock off Toledo. They've been very Jekyll and Hyde. And you take a look at this Akron team, and they played relatively close against Ohio. They were able to get a win over Buffalo, but they haven't necessarily impressed me either. You take a look at this Akron team, and they wound up laying one of the biggest eggs of the season earlier when they wound up scoring 43 points against Fordham. So both of these teams have been relatively untrusty. Now you take a look at Ali for Akron, 14 points per game, shooting 44% from distance. You do have he and Xavier Castaneda being able to combine for 5.2 assists per game. Castaneda is able to shoot about 37.5% from distance, 90% at the free throw line. But overall, Akron, they shoot 65% at the free throw line. They do shoot 35% from 3-point range. You've been able to get a lot down low out of Enrique Freeman, right around 12.5 points. 11.2 rebounds per game, but not necessarily a show team in the post. And then you take a look at Kent State, and this is one of the better free throw shooting teams in all of college basketball. They shoot 80% of the line now, only 29.5% from 3-point range. I do think that Giovanni Santiago, someone who shot 45% from distance, is going to be able to find it a little bit more. He has had 6 points of fewer in 3 of the last 4 games, but I do think that Sincere Carey is sincerely going to be the best guard out there on the floor. 17.5 points, 5 assists, 1.7 steals per game, shooting well above 85% in the free throw line. Malik Jacobs, 12.5 points, 7 boards per game, and then you've got 6'11" Justin Hamilton, 9.5 points, 6.5 boards. Very well-rounded player who's able to give the team 1.3 blocks per game. Even someone like a Mr. Trayvon Beck, who's been able to give you a few boards, has been able to do a solid job there. Kent State, not necessarily the deepest team, but I do think that they're going to get it done in a pair of offenses that have been a little bit stagnant this year. I just trust in the Kent State free throw shooting a little bit more in this spot and home court advantage to be playing a little bit of a role. So I did mind making Kent State a 2.5 point favorite. Willing to lay it here. Set the total 130.5. Both these teams have been relatively solid on defense, relatively putrid on offense. So going to be taking a look at the under along with Kent State. A93, A94 is a New York Post play of the day as Richmond is going to be playing against Davidson. Davidson find themselves between a 1-point favorite to a 1-point underdog. Mostly finding pick them out there, and your total on this game is between 143 and 143.5. New York Post play of the day is Richmond. I do think that Richmond is going to be able to get the job done because I do think that they are going to be able to force some turnovers on the Davidson team that they rank in the top 15 in regards to being able to take care of the ball. But guess who else ranks in the top 15 with regards to taking care of the ball? Richmond. Richmond and Davidson both really don't turn the ball over, but I do take a look at this Richmond bunch, and you do have Jacob Gillier, 10.5 points, 6.5 assists, leads the country with 3.5 steals per game. Tyler Burton, Grant Golden, both of these guys stand at least 6'8". They've been able to combine for 33.5 points, 14 rebounds. Both of these guys shoot north of 40% from 3-point range. I think that Davidson, with guys like Luka Bravic along Sam Menga, they're going to have a tough time matching up with that. Now, Hun Jun Lee is a 6'7" duo player that's able to give you 17.5 points, 6.5 rebounds, shooting 42% from 3, and overall, Davidson, they shoot 40.5% 46% from three-point range on the road, more like 43% from three. That's actually the second best three-point shooting rate on the road in all of college basketball, but I do think that Richmond is going to do a good job with Jacob Gilliard being able to control things at the point. I do think that you're also going to be able to have guys like Nate Kao be able to bust out as well. Kao has been a little bit up and down this year, 8 points, 4.5 rebounds per game, but he did have 14 in the last game against UMass. Look to get him going a little bit. He's been able to deliver 2 assists per game as well. And for Davidson, this is not a team that they necessarily get a lot of second chances. With regards to offensive rebound rate, they rank outside of the top 3-10 in that regard. So I do think that Richmond is going to be able to do a solid job on the glass, which will allow them to win this game. I think that this is just a bad matchup for a Davidson team that has really been one of the best cover teams in all of college basketball. Davidson right now, 11-3 against the spread, but I do think that Davidson is going to see their three-point shooting percentage go down a tad. I think that they're doing for a little bit of regression. I think that that's going to happen here against Richmond. Set Richmond as a three-point favorite. New York Post play of the day is Richmond as a pick slash laying a point. And your total on this game, I wound up setting it at a 145. So here out of 143 to 143.5, despite the fact that you got a Davidson team that plays relatively slow, I do think that you're going to get late game fouling. Both of these teams highly efficient as well. So taking a look at the over along with the New York Post play of the day of Richmond. 895, 896 on the betting board. Illinois is going to be playing us in Michigan. Michigan is finding themselves between 9.5 and 10-point underdogs. And your total on this game is 144 to 145. When it comes to Michigan, I really downgraded the team, but I only downgraded them to the point in which I made them an 8-point underdog, so I'm willing to gobble up 9-plus here with Michigan. They have been dealing with some health and safety protocols, but most of these guys should be back in the fold. You've got Musa Diabate, who's been able to give you right around 9 points, 6 boards per game. He's helped out Hunter Dickinson, who still has been really good down low. Dickinson, 16 points, 9 rebounds, so that's been solid. Michigan, they only turn the ball over right around 12.5 times per game. They've been able to shoot 34% from 3. Free throw shooting needs a little bit of help. They shoot 68% of the line, but Eli Brooks, 13 points, 3 assists. You take a look at this team on paper, and the metrics actually aren't bad. They just don't necessarily play as a cohesive unit, and for Illinois, what has been big for them is without Andre Curbelo, they've been playing as a cohesive unit. Illinois shooting about 38.7% from three as a collective with Alfonso Plummer, shooting 41% from distance and 97.7% at the free throw line, 16 points per game. Trent Frazier, 13 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, steal and a half per game, shooting 39% from distance, and Jacob Grandison shooting a little bit over 48% from distance, 12 points, 4 boards, 2.5 assists per game. And now you take a look at Kofi Coburn. He deserves to be in the top 5 with regards to player of the year of race. 22 points, 12.5 rebounds, block per game. But what are you going to be able to get out of someone like a Damonte Williams? He's really done a good job of being able to step up in the post for this team with right around 5.5 boards per game. Actually, let off college basketball, shooting 54% from 3 last season. So he's been very versatile and is able to give the team overall steal per game as well. But you do take a look at Michigan. I do think that someone like a Caleb Houston, who's been able to give you 9.5 points, 4.5 boards as a 6'8 combo freshman, is going to be able to step up. He has been able to give the team a little bit more with regards to facilitation. Had 4 assists and 8 rebounds in that last game against Rutgers. Now, Michigan has been a grody team, but I think that we went a little bit too far on the 8 on Michigan. Did wind up setting the total at a 144.5, mostly seeing 145, so I'm going to be taking a look at an under in this spot. I do think that Michigan is going to try to ramp up the defense a tad. Illinois has been efficient, but not necessarily fast, so taking a look at an under with Michigan. I'm willing to take the 9.5 to 10. I wound up setting this line at 8, so taking the points and going to be taking a look at the under, and we wrap things up with 897, 898 on the betting board. UNLV is going to be playing us at Fresno State. Fresno State is between a pick'em to a 1-point underdog with your total 127. And for Fresno State, I made them a 2-point underdog. So willing to lay the point slash take UNLV as a pick. Now, when it comes to Orlando Robinson, he has been absolutely tremendous for this Fresno State team. He is someone that stands 7 feet tall, has been able to get the team 19.5 points, 8.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, shooting 34% from 3. He has been able to deliver 17-plus points in each of the team's last 5 games. So got to love what he's able to do for this team. But I think the backcourt is going to have a little bit of a tough time. Now, Bryce Hamilton is sort of a Carmelo Anthony type of guy. 18 points on 18 shots is what he's giving you right now. Been able to chip in there right around 4 boards per game. But I do think that Royce Ham is going to go ham down, though. 9 points, 10.5 rebounds for the Texas transfer. UNLV, you only shoot around 31.5% from 3-point range. But I do like what I've seen a little bit more out of someone like a Josh Baker, a guy that's only been able to give you right around 5.5 points per game. But has stepped up recently. He's been able to give the team 5-plus points in each of the team's last 5 games. Shoots 96% free throw line. Overall, UNLV, they do shoot 73.5% at the free throw line, so he's been able to do a good job there. And then Jordan McCabe, very good pass first point guard. 5 assists, 1.4 turnovers per game. Not going to light it up on offense, but 5+ assists in each of the last 5 games. And that's something that Fresno State is lacking right now. Fresno State has been able to get quite a bit out of Anthony Holland. 8.5 points, 5 rebounds. She's 46% from three. All in all, Fresno State, much like UNLV, they shoot about 73.5% the free throw line, 31% from 3-point range, with right around 10.5 turnovers per game. So sort of mirror images of each other. But I take a look at guys like Deion Stroud, Jordan Campbell. They combine to be able to give you right around 14 points per game, but you do have your question marks with regards to these guys. Stroud, he wound up playing just 7 minutes in that game against San Jose State. Seems like he's a little bit banged up, and I do think that the home court for UNLV going to play very important in this game. Now, Fresno State in the bottom 20 with regards to possessions per game. UNLV not a whole heck of a lot faster than that. So, set this all at 124.5. I'm willing to take it under, and with UNLV, willing to lay up to a deuce here with them, so going to be laying the points, and that'll wrap things up for the Friday edition of Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN family of podcasts. Big thanks to Isabel Gonzalez, doing a great job over there at Mid-Major Madness, The Lair, New Mexico, along with Mountain West Wire. She joined me in the second segment. If you like what you're hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts: Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you've got a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, one of two ways to be able to listen. First one is my Twitter timeline, at Jaren41. Keep in mind, letters CM, they mean does not matter, so as per usual, please send these into the timeline. And the other way is via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you're able to fire whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review, coming at you guys every single day throughout the college basketball season, which means I'll be coming at you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.